Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. On today's episode, we return to the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group for their next installment of the Navigating Cybersecurity series. We're excited to welcome back Larry Zorio, chair of the working group, and valued working group member Jeremy Cooper-Levitt as they explore the second core function of the NIST CSF framework, Identify. The Identify core function is the foundational step designed to help organizations develop an understanding of their cybersecurity risk management processes, assets, data, capabilities, and risk appetite. Let's hear from Larry and Jeremy as they lay down the groundwork for effective cybersecurity risk management.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Sounds of Safety podcast. An IGIS podcast, and specifically today's episode is around cybersecurity. And we're going to be talking about the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, because a new version just came out. And if you've listened to some of our past episodes, we're actually taking people on a journey. And today on that journey, we're going to be focusing on specifically NIST CSF's function around identify. So identify, it's a very important category, just like the other functions, but we're going to be starting there. I am your host, Larry Zorio. I am the CISO for Mark 43 and also the chair of the IGIS's Cybersecurity Working Group. And with me, I have Jeremy Cooper-Levitt, who is the CISO for Inventiv. Well, let's get into it. Jeremy, how are you doing today? What's new? How are things?
I'm doing great. It's a sunny Friday and there's no snow on the ground here in Denver this week. So that's always good for us here, especially this time of year when it's almost April. But I'm excited to talk about Identify and the NIST framework and how it can help us in cybersecurity land.
Yes, yes. So hopefully this will be helpful to everybody listening. And let's just dive right into it. So I'll waste any more time. So I did mention that NIST CSF came out with a new version, and we've covered a few sections already. So we gave an overview of the entire framework and why it's important. And then we covered the first function, which was govern. And the next function is, well, actually, I'll go over all of them with you real quick. So it goes govern. Today, we're going to be talking about identify. Then you have protect, detect, respond, and recover. So today, again, is identify. There are actually subcategories. So NIST is really good, right? They have identify. And under that, they always kind of have subcategories. These are the areas that you should focus on. And then they have even categories below that. But the first one that we're going to get into today is around asset management. So under identify, there's a subcategory called asset management. And Jeremy, why don't you talk just in general why the audience needs to care, needs to worry, needs to put some energy towards asset management.
Yeah, I think it's a very important topic, especially asset management. You need to know what matters to you. What are your crown jewels for your company? What is the most important systems that you have and the most important type of data that you have? It could be the information you have on your customers. If you're in the medical industry, it could be health information. If you're in the credit card industry, it could be credit card numbers, but you got to know what you're protecting. You got to know the assets to circle the wagons around, to put all your defenses around so that you don't spread yourself too thin. You make the appropriate investments. And the first step is knowing what you're going to protect. Going out and having an asset inventory should be one of your first steps, because not every asset is equal in the terms of its priority and how much protection you should place on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're focusing on the data side of it, which is very important. It definitely start there, right? Or it doesn't have to necessarily be data. It could be a physical asset as well that you have to protect, but you definitely want to do that. I think it's important too, with what Jeremy was saying, is like, how are you going to do that? Well, you can start categorizing it. Hopefully you have a data classification. And that's something that we actually talked about in govern. Govern is a lot around policy and procedure. So you want to start classifying these different assets as well. What would be some examples of how you could classify?
I think a lot of companies and organizations use a similar method the military could use. There's secret, there's top secret, there's public information. So I think a lot of companies need to kind of figure out what do they want to use. What I'm seeing people use for data classification and or asset classification would be like, what's your most, your highest level, your restricted confidential is the one I'm used to using, where it's very limited to only a specific group of people. And that's where I usually start, is that high risk data or high risk systems to put that. I asset and inventory them. I know where they are. Where are they at in my network? Who has access to them? I try and find out as much as I can about them. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spend as much time on the data that's public that anyone can go and view and can look at. I might spend also time for confidential information that maybe just to people limited inside the company. But where I'm going to start is what I would define as like restricted confidential. Other groups in the military model could call it top secret. Mm-hmm. You know, having that classification kind of guides and runs your priority. I still like the prioritized approach, going after the most, I call those the crown jewels again, that, and then giving it a label. Restricted confidential is one I am used to using.
Sure. Yeah. Restricted confidential. So a big part of our audience is going to be public safety. So for public safety professionals, think about what would be those kind of top secret restricted systems. Some that come to mind is anything that stores maybe CJI data. So FBI data could be a system, or even if you have those files directly on a subfolder somewhere, it could be FBI background checks, could be arrest records, very sensitive information, right? So think about both the crown jewels side of it, but then also the systems themselves. Think about your agency. If X system went down, what would happen? And which of those systems do you need to have up and running for you to be a functioning public safety office, police agency, a fire department, an EMT, a prison, a jail system? So think about it that way. In looking at the document itself, the NIST framework 2.0 itself, it actually does a really good job of explaining the different assets that you should be looking at. And some are more obvious than others. So I did want to cover a few of those today. And then Jeremy, like if you have any opinion on any of these, like please chime in. So they do a really good job of breaking it down. So the first one is you want to be looking at hardware. Let's just use the CJI data, the FBI data as the example, right? So what hardware do you have that might either store or transmit CJI data? Well, you want to make that a priority, right? The next one would be software system services. So that's the example I already brought up. After that, it's even like network communications, data flows, where your data is going. You want to inventory that to understand where your egress and ingress points are and things of that nature. And those are kind of some of the examples they give. Jeremy, do you have any thoughts for the listeners? Just anything, any response to any of those?
I like how they start off like a physical level. I could make it very simple. Like here, start with your hardware. You still got to know what's on that because it can't be all your hardware. It needs to be the prioritized hardware. And then it talks about, well, what's running on that hardware? What databases, what software? And then finally it says, how is it connected to the networks? So you start kind of at a central place and you have circular rings going around it that are being used to protect it, to protect the asset. Your first step was to go in and identify it, to find it first. So you know where it is and what you need to do. And then as you find it, you ask yourself those questions. Mm-hmm. That will drive the risk, the priority, what you're going to spend on it. It drives so many different things once you start to know your assets.
Yeah. The other one that really, I knew that it should be in here, but sometimes I forget that it comes under this category, and it will actually be a kind of a good dovetail into the next section we're going to talk about. Is it does specifically state that you need to identify your suppliers as well. So those third parties, those fourth parties that you're working with, is identify them, inventory them. And it made me think of this because you had said something around risk, right? When I think of risk, I always think of the third-party risk assessments that need to be done. So that is one that you definitely need to inventory your third parties, your suppliers. And it's a good dovetail into it because the next section is actually risk assessments. So that is the next section, which is under identify. And there's a lot of categories here that we can cover, but let's first talk about the supplier risk because we just did bring it up. Jeremy, what are your thoughts around supplier risk? Any recommendations, thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I feel like supplier risk's really picked up over the last decade and a half or so, in the last 15 years, because of kind of real big cyber attacks that have happened where somebody got into a company through a third-party supplier. It's so important that you know the security posture, how your suppliers, how your third parties that you work with, how they treat their security. Are they on par with you? Because it doesn't matter whether you outsourced it or had a third party or not. In the end, you're still responsible for that data that you're storing and protecting. So in my opinion, you can't just outsource security to somebody else. It's still your responsibility. You can't outsource your responsibilities to that data that you were entrusted with. And third parties are a part of it. I think most third parties now are starting to realize that after the last about 10 to 15 years. It's important that in contract language, in third-party risk management, that there's written agreements with those suppliers, that they will meet the level of security that you need to meet. And I see that in a lot of contracts now. And, you know, if you have a good program in place and you're doing all these things, especially following NIST, when you have to commit, yes, we're following security requirements, it's a lot easier to do it when you're following a good, strong framework like NIST.
Mm-hmm. We could spend a whole episode just on third-party risk. And I actually think we need to hold ourselves accountable and definitely do that for the audience at some point. Probably after this series is done, we need to do one just on third-party risk. But if I'm in the audience's shoes, maybe I work at an agency and it's a smaller agency and I don't have all the resources to be able to do some of this, but I know that I need to be doing something around third-party risk. What would be just the one recommendation you would have for them to get started to at least give them some assurances that the vendors they're using are up to snuff?
I would probably ask a couple different questions of the vendor, like, hey, vendor, do you have a threat vulnerability management program in place? Are you patching your systems? Are you making sure that your systems are updated? Because that's how they get in. Like, that's how hackers get in, is through a third party not patching their system, and they have an open backdoor or a vulnerability that can be exploited. That'd be one of the big questions I'd want to know is, you know, are you keeping your systems updated and are you patching? Are you testing your things? If I'm sending over credit card data, are you PCI compliant? Are you following payment card industry compliance? I'd probably also ask them, have you heard of NIST before? And hopefully they have, and they're attempting to follow it. But those would be some of the top questions that I would ask. And I actually have surveys that I use in my position, and we ask, depending on the type of data that we give to people, we ask anywhere from 10 questions to a couple hundred. So that's like I said, we could dedicate a whole meeting to this, but
we will. Yeah, we definitely will. Those are really great examples or ways for people to get started. Some of the other ones that I would recommend is ask for a SOC 2 report. A SOC 2 report, for those that aren't aware, it's basically the third party hires an audit firm to come in and assess their security controls. And they produce a report that can be shared with their customers. So I would definitely ask for that. Jeremy mentioned asking about NIST, especially in public safety. Some ones that are really gaining traction lately are, you could ask the company if they are FedRAMP authorized, if they're StateRAMP authorized. Those are two big ones. I know some companies have ISO certifications, which is another framework, but that's something else that you could ask for. So those are just some. We're going to dedicate a whole episode to third-party risk. Okay, moving on with the risk assessment section, there is also a piece around vulnerability management. So threats, vulnerabilities, the likelihoods of those, the impacts of those. Jeremy, what are your thoughts to that? How important is that vulnerability piece?
It's very important. Obviously, we talked about, like, you're worried about your supplier. Are they up to date? Are they patching? One of the most important things here is we took our first step and we did our inventory. We found out our assets. What are the most critical systems that we have? What software is running on them? What is the operating system that's running on them? That's very important when you're dealing with vulnerabilities, because now you know when a new patch comes out, I better be patching first these critical systems that I already identified were the most important and highest priority to me. Now, these things that protect my crown jewels, these assets, I'm going to make sure that they're getting the latest updates, the latest patches, the latest testing, the latest vulnerability scans. If I'm going to bring in penetration testers or ethical hackers, I'm going to have them test those things out too so they can manage that. I'm also going to use threat intelligence. I can feed it. There's a lot of solutions out there where you can tell a threat intelligence solution like, hey, here's the operating systems and the software that I use and the data that I have. Feed me threat intel on those systems so that I can understand the risks that are up against them and the threats that are up against them. A lot of threat and risk is driven by what you're running, your assets, the hardware and the software that's running on those systems. So I need to know now that I know what I have, I got to go out there and find what are, you know, because I have this stuff, what are the threats now for me using like a Unix system or a Windows system? What should I be aware of?
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned both the intel and the threat side of it, because those are actually two other subcategories under identify. There's one that calls out that you need to start kind of monitoring and gathering intel. There are a lot of services out there that will provide you intel, some paid, some are free. I know CISA. If you haven't done that yet, go sign up for the CISA alerts. They send them out. If there is some sort of threat, if there's some sort of vulnerability, you'll get an email that day about that. And that's intel. That is some intel for you on what's going on with your assets. And it won't be catered exactly to you, but an example, you might get a alert around a 0-day vulnerability with, could be Adobe, or it could be Java. It could be really anything. So definitely do that. And that is a bit of intel. And there are some other sources as well that you can sign up for that are free. On the threat side, I'm glad that they have this called out. There's a term called threat modeling, which is kind of what Jeremy described pretty much, that you're kind of looking at your assets and you are identifying maybe where some holes are. Maybe you're running an older system and there could be some vulnerabilities and you have to mitigate them. As I'm talking about this, Jeremy, I know before we jumped on here, we were catching up and you actually gave an example. I think it was like that Unix system example. I think that would be a really good example for the audience on maybe doing like a threat model of a system like that. So obviously keep it generic, but I think that was a good example. Could you explain to me what you were talking about earlier before we hopped on? I think that's a good one.
I think a lot of times companies are sometimes are stuck with a system for a while. They use it because it's working, but it could be, and you know, I've noticed this a lot with some older Unix systems that after a while, it still works, but the vendor doesn't support it anymore, or it's on an older version, so you can't patch it anymore. You know, what are the threats that you're going to face now because you're using something that's end of life and outdated? That's why a threat intelligence source is good. But it also means I've got to do something to better protect that system. As part of my risk assessment, maybe I need to put in front of it an intrusion prevention system or better firewall rules, or lock down access to that system to only my administrators. Look at the permissions to the box and really lock it down, because I can't at this time afford to upgrade it. So instead, I've got to come up with a better way to protect it until I'm ready to upgrade it to the next level. But I need to know what are the available threats out there that are coming, because there's always someone probing you, especially a system on the internet, looking for that signature of that old Unix system that you're on that's open to, you know, an attack. And that's what they do. They try and find their easiest way in. They find the weaknesses in your armor. And a lot of the weaknesses would be old software that you're still using. And sometimes you can't get away from using it. So what can you do to better monitor for those threats that are coming? That means you got to know it, know what the threats are.
Now that's perfect. I am almost certain that everybody listening to this episode definitely has a few of those systems. You are not alone. There are just some systems, maybe you work. Well, again, this is public safety, but the example I'll give is like manufacturing. In a manufacturing line, there is some system in the warehouse that is literally pumping out widgets. That thing's 50 years old. It has sunsetted 20 years ago, but you know what? It just keeps pumping out those widgets that you're trying to sell, and you need to find a way to secure it. So that's just an example. These happen all the time. All right. I think that's actually a really good, I love how this flow's going, because the next one, the next section is called improvement. Improvements to your organizational cybersecurity risk management processes, procedures, activities identified across all functions. So with this one, I mean, we've been talking about improvements this whole time, right? You're identifying risks and how you would improve upon that. But Jeremy, how would you manage that ongoing improvement of this process, of these risk assessments, of these threat models, of the intel you're gathering? How would you manage that?
Well, improvement means always staying on top of it, being proactive, and also evaluating and testing yourself. So one of my mantras in security, cybersecurity, is patch, patch, patch. The other one is attack, attack, attack. I'm always trying to hack myself, whether it's through another company or my red team. I'm always having them try and find holes or ways in. And once they do, we try and we fix that. So that kind of offensive security model that I can use. I'm also staying, like I said, on top of the patching. But I just gave an example. Hey, there's a system that we can't fix, so let's put monitoring controls around them. Well, that's great that I put monitoring controls around them and I did my best to protect that. But now I better test it. I better go and try and hack into that system that's making widgets from 30 years and seeing if I can get to it. I'm also going to look at improving the access to it. Let's say that widget, you know, in your example, the thing is pushing out the widgets. Does that thing need to be on the internet? Does it really need to be able to send emails?
Really
Does
good point.
Does it need to be on a wide area network? Can be on a local area network? How can I cut it off from everyone? And that improves that security and that threat model for that. So I'm always looking at ways to improve. And improvement can also mean going back to the vendor and saying, hey, look, we're on this old outdated software. Can you give me a break? Or how can you help me afford this so I can get up to a secure level? Mm-hmm. And I would work with my vendors at try and partner with people to get things fixed, improve your budget, improve your security staff, and improve everything that you can to protect those assets. But if you keep your eye on the prize and saying and reminding everyone, I'm trying to protect our most prized possessions that keep us going, that we're obligated to protect. If I improve that message every year, I'm going to get further along and I'm going to get the funding that I need at some point. And if I also bring up the fact that they're responsible too, those people with the purse strings, they're responsible as well for protecting this. That's important as well, as improving your message every year of what it is you're trying to protect. Here's the results of what we've been doing. By the way, we were able to hack in and get in fairly easily. Those monitoring controls we had in place, they're not working very well. Or maybe they are working well. Hey, they're working really good right now. I think we can go another year. But I think if you're doing that and improving your posture and improving your message, you're going to get better support.
That is spot on. I want to go back to two of your points just to hit them home. I think it's great. Like if people are taking notes, make sure that you are questioning, does it need to be exposed to the internet? That is a great one. I mean, if you can go through your inventory and ask that question, of all of these different systems, wouldn't it be great if you could just shut off the internet for 20% of them? No more web access for these 20%. They just don't need it. Think about all the risks that would be mitigated by you just doing that. Now, certainly there are going to still be others But that alone, ask that question of yourself and of your coworkers as well. That was a really good point. All right. So that's the end. So there were three sections. Let me just review them with everybody. So identify, there is asset management, which we covered, risk assessment, which we covered, and the last one we did was improvement. So that is the end of this one. So this one is a bit, I guess, don't get intimidated by this one. You can definitely handle tackling the identify section. So we're going to move on and we're going to go to our tech talk section of the episode. I'm sure many of you in the audience are like, all right, this is great, Larry. Jeremy, this is great. You're talking a lot about process, how we can improve risk assessments. All right, I got to worry about my third parties, but I really like technology and I like to use technology to solve my problems. So we're going to always try to cover something called Tech Talk, where we give you some recommendations, a few, on some technology you should use. So Jeremy, specifically for identify, if you could only have one technology to get you started, what would it be and why?
It's the same technology that I've been using over the last 20 plus years. It's the vulnerability scanner. Scanning my systems and finding out what they're open to, looking for open ports. Those vulnerability scanners have come a long way, but they're still around and there's a reason for it. And it's one of the first things that a company should be doing is scanning for vulnerabilities. So that's what I'm always going to take into battle with me is my vulnerability scanner.
Oh, you stole mine.
You let me go first.
Oh, you stole it. Yes, that is a big one. The other good thing about some, maybe even most vulnerability scanners, I think at this point, they can actually run like inventory scans for you. So it's not even running a vulnerability scan, because the first thing usually a vulnerability scanner does is it runs an inventory across your network. And then once it comes up with the inventory, then it gives you the option to go scan those for vulnerabilities. So Jeremy, that is just a great one, because you're going to kill a bunch of birds with one stone with vulnerability scanning. So seeing as you stole, which you did, my technology, I'm going to bring up another one that's going to help you with inventory. A lot of your firewall systems and even VPN systems will give you a good sense of what people are using on your network and what people, what websites, what SaaS solutions people are going to out on the internet. So that would be another good thing. Hopefully you already have one of these. You have firewalls, you have VPNs, you have web proxies. Use those. Look at the reports that come out of those, and they can give you a good idea of what's being used. Some of them are just very sophisticated, and they'll even categorize it for you. Like, these are the public cloud storage sites we see your employees, your officers going to. These are, it could be really anything. It could be, I mean, it can even give you a category of, these are some of the bad websites, like hacking category, that people are going to. So that can give you a good sense of what's going on your network as well. So I think between a vulnerability scanner, which can also run an inventory scan, and also your firewalls, VPNs, they're going to give you a good idea of what people are doing. And that should help create pretty solid inventory to get things started for you. And off of that, you can run risk assessments. You can do all sorts of things. You can do threat models, everything like that. So hopefully that gives people a little bit of a taste of some technology to use. We'll always try to do that every episode, give you some examples of technologies. Jeremy, any final parting words of wisdom for everybody?
Yeah, I like your technology that you picked. And I think something to remember is every time somebody goes outside of the company on the internet, they're opening a door and they're going out and they're seeing and they're looking. They could possibly come back in with something that infected their computer, but they opened a door into your networks. And that's why it's important to understand and know where your people are going and that you're protecting the pathway out and back in. to keep that separate from your assets that you just spend all that time trying to protect. And that's one of the reasons why I always said, does it need to be on the internet? It's the same thing. When your people go out onto the internet, are they going through a protected route? Because every time they leave, they open a door, stuff can get in.
Mm-hmm. Great final words there. Okay, everybody. Well, we said at the beginning that we were taking you on a NIST CSF journey. And today, we took you on that identify journey. Next episode is going to be protect. So that's going to be the next functional category that we cover. So you can look forward to that. But until next time, I just want to thank everybody for this episode of Sounds of Safety podcast by IGIS. And we will talk to you again soon. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.